The Around the NFL Podcast, featuring NFL Network's Greg Rosenthal.
Welcome back to another edition of the Around the NFL Podcast, starring Greg Rosenthal. This is Dan Hansis, joined by a room filled with some heroes, Mark Sessler, and yes, the twice mentioned Greg Rosenthal, who, yes, some people say NFL Network, some people, Sully, still say NFL.com, let's be honest.
Thank you very much. Here with NFL.com's Greg Rosenthal.
NFL.com's Greg Rosenthal.
That is an all-timer. I was talking to my friend Bob
I have a friend named Bob.
In Boston.
One of you is lying.
And he said when he first heard, I believe it was that drop, or it might have been the drop where it was kind of the Australian guy doing an NFL. He was laughing so hard in bed, like it disrupted his wife's sleep. And she was like, what is happening here? Why are you? And he had to rewind it many times to listen to it. He loved
that,
it.
That drop is a couple months old now. But, Mark, I remember you and I going into this is not going to sound very masculine. Don't be ashamed of me, Dad.
Where are we going?
We went to get our makeup done, across the way. And in the makeup room was Amber Theo Harris, who gives the vocal on that sound drop. And she had been getting blown up on Twitter in her mentions. Like, wait, are you guys making fun of me on your podcast? I was like, no. I had to explain what was behind it. Kind of a tricky, difficult thing to explain to a person that doesn't have a lot of the background info on how that came to be.
Yeah, I think we basically utterly confused her. And like most interactions with our female coworkers around here, we just left with our status lowered potentially to some degree.
Yeah, I think that's very fair to say. This is the Wednesday edition of the Around the NFL Podcast. And Chris Wessling cannot be with us today. Hopefully we'll have him back on Friday. But the show must go on, and we have a lot to get to today, including we're about to hit the dark period, right, Greg? This is it.
Thursday, 31 teams wrapped it up. The Cardinals, they decided to get an extra week of vacation. Bruce Arians, smart. They've been gone already for a week. The other 31 teams are done Thursday.
Is it smart? Or here's a perfect example of the segment today, buy, sell, or hold on minicamp narratives. Is it smart to take an extra week, or does it show a lack of commitment?
It's a good question.
Buy, sell, or hold.
They started a week earlier, too.
Buy, sell, or hold, Greg.
I'm selling that. I'm smart. Get that vacation time.
I think it's smart. What if you get a major injury on Thursday? Was that worth it, please?
No, you guys passed the test. That's a clear sell. On the take.
By the way, we think all this news is going to come on Thursday. It's usually around by noon that you realize that half of these coaches took their team bowling. Like, that last day is treated as a complete joke.
Yeah, it's like hopscotch tournament, 10 a.m., and then everybody's onto their jet skis.
That's a Browns activity.
Yeah, like
right
Mike McCarthy said, these are the most important practices of the offseason at the same time that he gave the minicamp off to all of his veteran players.
I will sell that storyline.
Doesn't make any sense.
I'm selling that one, too. All right. Now, that's coming up later today. Also, a lot of news to get to. This maybe for the last time, a lot of news to get to as the NFL does enter its dark period. And that teases for something we'll talk about on Friday, some mysteries ahead in the NFL. But for now, Greg, we will get to the thing that we didn't get to on Monday. Just a little warning for you.
Okay.
Peace and love, all with all respect. We got to get to it today.
I'm here.
All right, let's do some news.
Bradley's going to escape from Herrera. Bradley trying to chip on Chua, and he scores! Michael Bradley!
Okay.
Sully, and I would love to hear from Sully on this, so good choice of a news drop. So the U.S. and Mexico had a World Cup qualifying match in Mexico City, correct?
Yep, correct.
And Sully, and we were talking a little bit before the show, with a couple of his buddies, including Crowder, right?
Yeah, Robbie Crowder.
Crowderhead.
Yeah.
You bust down and put your life on the line to attend this event attended by 84,000 Mexicans and 1,000 Americans separated by some barbed wire. Can you tell a little of the story?
Yeah, separated by about 100 federales, a few U.S. Marines, and a bunch of barbed wire, and separating the 1,000 U.S.
Do you think
American
that was necessary, or was it really? It
was. It was the most intense atmosphere I've ever been in, for sure. So they were there.
Were you guys getting glares through the fence? Did you feel?
It was more than glares. I mean, they were throwing stuff at us. It was a constant.
You said you had like you were getting doused by like not just beer but cans of beer.
Unknown liquids were flying.
It was gasoline, Sully.
Yeah,
that's why you saw some of those lighters flying by you as well.
Yeah.
And I asked Sully, it is kind of a wild sports event to attend. And
it's an awesome one.
It's pretty cool that you went. But also was part of it, Mark, some practices you're into, you like the danger of it all, you know. You feel like it's about pleasure, but also sometimes the idea that there could be pain, you're into that.
Makes
type
you
of stuff.
Feel more alive.
Yeah, I mean, I'll let you throw that on me. I'm not sure what that's in reference to, but probably so.
For Sully, a big part of this was the danger of it all, that you're going to support your country's national team and also on some level putting yourself in bodily danger. Very interesting.
Yeah. So, I'm sorry to report that Dan Campbell came back and had to replace Bill Belichick of the around the NFL producers.
I think this earned you like more, although Dan Campbell wouldn't need barbed wire. Federales.
No, none of
or
that.
Anything. But down to, you said they took you, all the security presence took you out of the stadium into a safe house, essentially.
Yeah.
We got the Mexicans hate us that much?
From the hotel. Yeah.
If you're a Mexican listener of the show, reach out to Sully and let him know that not everyone.
Well, no, they weren't.
It's more the soccer.
Tree fans were great the whole trip except for game day. Like
they take it quite seriously.
Oh, for sure.
We scored a draw, which is a very good thing, correct?
Yep, very good thing.
Excellent. All right, let's do some news starting. Not a very good thing. Andrew Luck's uncertainty about the health of that throwing shoulder. The Colts quarterback has not been involved with practices yet, and there is still Sully, how did we get it? What is the soundbite again coming off again?
It's all good. Hold on a second. I'll play it for you.
Yep.
No idea. My guess is as good as yours.
Okay.
You know, and
it's the timetable.
You know, he's going through the process. We know that process.
Okay, let's start. Okay.
Here. Yeah, got you.
All right, let's start with the news, and we'll start with Andrew Luck, who obviously not taking part in the mini camp with the Colts and coming off shoulder surgery on his throwing shoulder. There continues to be uncertainty about his availability. Chuck Pagano was asked this week on a timetable for Luck, and much of the consternation of Colts Nation, it's very clear there is none yet.
No idea. My guess is as good as yours, you know, and you know, he's going through the process. We know that process can be, you know, long. He's doing well. We're just going to take it one day at a time, you know, and the next step is getting to the point where, you know, he can throw, you know, and then there's going to be, you know, obviously a number and a pitch count, you know, on that. And he's going to have to continue to build, you know, from the ground floor up.
Mark, Andrew Luck was asked about his shoulder, and he said they don't need to have any concerns. It will be fine. Should there be concerns here?
I mean, you want your franchise quarterback to go through an entire offseason healthy. You don't want surgeries. You don't want to worry about pitch counts and all this business when he's 27 years old. But at this point in June, I mean, I don't think you get overly worried. You want to just treat his body. You want to give him the perfect chance to heal and not rush it. The worst mistake you could make would be to get him out there and get him active before he's ready.
Yeah, but not so much right now. The fact that they're not saying what you want to hear if you're a Colts fan is, oh, he'll be ready for training camp. We're easing him back now. But the fact that they're not ready to say that makes you think this is a very serious situation.
Well, it makes you assume that he won't be ready for the start of training camp, and they're definitely shooting for week one, and that just shows you what a serious surgery it was, because he had the surgery in the middle of January, and the fact that he's not close, it doesn't sound like he's too close to throwing yet, and when he's fully back, like, I just reading between the lines, and I've seen a lot of these over the years, you wouldn't be surprised if he doesn't play at all in the preseason if the first game action he sees is during the regular season. And there has to be at least some thought that he won't be ready for opening day. But we're just guessing. That's what we do.
Well, that's what we do. That's part of the gig. In other quarterback news, franchise quarterbacks with shoulder issues, Cam Newton won't be throwing at Panthers minicamp after all, just days after it was anticipated by the team that he would be throwing at this camp. Ron Rivera said that he, quote, got ahead of himself by 1 week, this according to the team's official website. Not a setback for Newton, according to Mike Garofolo, but Rivera just got a little ahead of himself. He's still on track. So that's more a positive timetable for your franchise quarterback. Expect Cam to be ready, I would think, at training camp. But we shall see. We shall see.
Well, it shows that the two surgeries were different, even though significantly different, even though they were both shoulder surgeries, because Cam had his surgery 3 months after Andrew Luck. It was a 12-week recovery for him to be throwing the ball again. So just, you know, reading between the lines, you can pretty much see that the Luck surgery was more invasive.
Well, and even if they were the same, and they clearly weren't in this case, you have no idea how two different human bodies are going to respond to the same type of surgery.
Moving on, in Cleveland Browns camp, there's a couple things going on. First up, Brock Osweiler.
I can't believe it.
He is, of course, the quarterback that was acquired in a trade with the Browns in that complex salary dump scenario. And guess what? Not only is he still in the mix right now for the Browns, he's getting a lot of positive buzz about how he's looked and a possibility that he actually is going to be the starter coming out of camp. We'll see how that works out. But he talked about his chances and his ambitions for the Cleveland football franchise.
I want to be the starter of this team, and I'm working every single day to put myself in a position to earn that starting job. But my focus isn't anywhere as far as who's getting what reps. My sole focus is what can I do today to be a better player and have a good practice and make my teammates better.
It's kind of like a pull-string doll answer for a quarterback.
He's been this guy from the minute any of us heard anything he had to say, when he was the Peyton Manning's backup, that he's very measured, sort of an athlete, quote, speak, machine. He's good at that. And I'm not really that concerned with how he looks, you know, in June minicamp practices and previous OTAs. That Osweiler's issues have always been when you're on the field against an opponent who's actually blitzing you and putting you into danger, where's your decision making and your mechanics at that point?
I wish we had if this was a TV show, a split screen of when Brock is talking to Mark's rolling his eyes and shaking his head listening to Brock now that he's on Team Sessler.
I don't dislike the guy, but there's a lot of baggage that obviously comes with Brock Osweiler, and one thing that I find a little bit surprising.
I almost feel bad for him now, watching him today. I was like,
"Well,
he's
making a ton of money still, and he has a legit opportunity. If there's like two or three teams in the league where if you're Brock Osweiler, you have a legit chance to start games this season. This is one of them. It ended up being not a terrible landing spot. I just think that when the trade happened, the presumption was he won't even be on the roster. He won't even be on the team by the time we get here, and he still is.
Well, and that's when the trade happened. The Browns, of course, got a lot of positive press for making this move. And then it even seemed even more kind of clever that then there were the reports, and the Browns might not even want him at all, and they're going to cut him. And I remember at the time of the trade, I said it on this podcast. I was like, I hope this doesn't end with come the end of the summer, we're hearing reports about how Brock is really, he has a good chance to start games. Because you know it's not going to work out. Let's just be honest. Like, we've been through this before. Jets fans have been down this road. Browns fans have been down this road. That when you try to put this type of a round peg into the square hole, it's never going to fit.
Right.
So it seems to me like a waste of time when you could have a guy like DeShone Kizer, maybe get him more reps, get him right in the mix maybe, or another developmental guy like Cody Kessler. Jets have a similar situation with Josh McCown potentially starting when you have two young kids on a going nowhere team. Brock Osweiler starting games, especially week one, I just feel like it sends a bad message to the fan base.
I don't think that there's any even remote suggestion of a guarantee that that's going to happen. I mean, it sounds like all we've heard this week is that, and Hugh Jackson does not want to talk about reps and where they're happening with the first or second team, but Kizer's being given a Russell Wilson-like chance to win the starting job. I think Kessler and Kizer, you'd have to imagine in both cases, Hugh Jackson had a lot of say in drafting those quarterbacks. Osweiler just landed on the roster in a bizarre front office.
Well, and they never really replaced him. I've always wondered if they had conversations with the NFL after the trade happened and if they got any pressure to keep him because it was essentially illegal to do a contract dump according to NFL rules, and they admonished him for it. I don't know.
Well, they would. They're
it's
also
good theory.
They're giving him first team reps, right?
I mean, he's
rotating.
Yeah, but it sounds like, for instance, yesterday when all this stuff about Kaiser's getting first team, Kaiser and Kessler worked mostly with the first, and Osweiler mostly with the second team. But that, again, it switches day to day. I don't read too much into that when you don't have a clear quarterback.
Right, and when they're in
but
shorts,
we're
going to get to my trip to Rams camp.
That's yeah,
like that really hammered it home for me how overcooked a lot of the conversation is this time of year. For instance, Vance Joseph, the coach of the Broncos, said, in terms of his quarterback competition, May and June will have zero to none in terms of the impact that it will have on his decision. He says that's how much May and June has mattered to him, zero to none.
Let's move on. Eric Decker is a free agent now after the Jets formally released the veteran wide receiver earlier this week. In his first day as a free agent, the receiver is meeting with the Tennessee Titans, rap sheet reported on Wednesday. Decker released Tuesday. He's 30 years old. We know the story with him. He's coming off a couple of surgeries. His last full healthy season, 2015, he was part of the best wide receiver duo in football. And I continue to think that he is a massive value buy at this stage of the game on the NFL calendar. Whoever gets him, and the Titans feel like a nice fit, potentially.
Don't think I didn't just see you just throw in the best wide receiver duo in football. Like
look at the numbers, 2015.
That's not an opinion. It's an opinion. We'll see. I love this fit.
You're not going to believe, by the way,
I'm
Greg.
Just kidding.
You're not going to believe their opinions on this podcast. And
while
you're here, give me this, because I am on Mark's corner now with the worst team in the league. They combined for like 2,400 yards and like 25.
You might be right.
That
I quickly tried to race through and think of a better example, and I couldn't. So you might be right. And I love this move for the Titans. And I'm all in on the Chargers being the team of around the NFL. Matt Money Smith. I missed that announcement that he was going to be the play-by-play host, but that helps it even more. But I do like these Titans too. And Eric Decker adding to that group. I mean, Mariota having a whole new receiver group. I think it'd be a terrific pickup.
Yeah, and John Robinson, again, has proven that he works quickly. You went into this offseason with wide receiver being a burning need. You now have Corey Davis. If you ever added Eric Decker, that position group becomes a strength potentially, and it was a completely different type of offense.
Right, and you have their third-round pick was also at wide receiver, Tywan Taylor. So it could be a totally different group, essentially, if you pick up Decker.
And Tajay Sharpe. Rashard
Sharp, Matthews is solid. He's going to play a little.
If Tajay Sharpe can keep his head on straight, this guy sounds like a little bit of a nightmare.
He made another guy's head not straight, according to reports. We don't want to say it's all legend. I don't want to throw any cold water. I know everybody seems very excited to make the Chargers the team of ATL in 2017. I guess I'm the only one that has any problems with them abandoning the city of San Diego. Like
I'm with you on that.
Reward them as team of ATL after they committed what I thought was an affront to a very loyal fan base.
I find it an odd team because we haven't circled around and had a team of ATL a second time. It would be an odd year to do that for a team that completely showed zero loyalty to the city of
that
San
has
Diego.
It's not come up yet. There's been a lot of positive juice about the Chargers on the show in the last couple of months.
I'm sure it was a takes
us. You make a strong point. I was there at the last game in San Diego history, and I came back talking about it for days about how they, you know, creamed that poor city and how unfair it was.
If you've had your team move,
you make a strong point.
Yeah, I think there's sensitivity to it. And, you know, we'll figure out our team of ATL by roughly week 8 or 9, so there will be in-depth conversation.
Moving on to Bears camp, Mitchell Trubisky, of course, the second overall pick. Has a lot of work to do. He only had 13 starts at University of North Carolina, and he needs as many live reps as possible to really get up to speed at this level of football. And during Tuesday's minicamp, Coach John Fox was asked if he would consider a Trubisky package, quote-unquote, to ensure the first-round pick got some work this season. Fox decided to conjure up his time with Tim Tebow.
You know, I've been around in situations like that before, you know, back in my time in Denver, even with Tebow. So, you know, we're going to do whatever we can. And as coaches, we've got to put guys in positions where they can utilize their skill set, and it won't be any different this year.
Plenty of logic there, Mark. But just invoking the name Tebow with any young quarterback, it just feels like it's something that's unnecessary because Tebow does not have a great reputation as a professional quarterback. Let's just be honest here.
I don't know why this thing where you bring these rookies in, the Browns tried this with Johnny Manziel too, where we're going to have a package of plays or a different type of offense for rookie quarterback X. I don't know why you develop Trubisky this way. When it's also saying we want to give him a full year to develop and really come back the year after as a potential starter. It always bothers me that Fox essentially was kept in the dark about this entire trade up and the way that they picked Trubisky, and now he's got to deal with it. And it's not a player that he wanted necessarily. And it's a team that there probably is going to be increased pressure if Mike Glennon struggles, not from Fox or the coaching staff necessarily, but from other parts of the building to get Trubisky on the field. And this, I don't think this is that, but it sort of hints at that a little.
And if you really break down what Fox said, like almost everything John Fox said, it amounts to nothing. I mean, he doesn't say anything. No one gives less to the media. And it would seem crazy in my mind if they did this with Trubisky. I kind of would be surprised if it happened.
I want to cycle back to the Browns quickly. Bad hosting job by me. But let's cycle back. This happened right before we came upstairs. But Myles Garrett, the first overall pick in the NFL draft, in minicamp on today, Wednesday, suffered a foot injury. He was seen limping to the sideline at the end of the practice. Coach Hugh Jackson did not seem to think it was serious, so we'll find out. And this would be a good test, Mark, if the Browns, if God hates Cleveland and all that stuff, if we have some type of serious setback for this guy, let's just hope, just a little cramp or something. Nothing, no Sammy Watkins scenario here.
Yeah, I feel like if God has like a top five sort of power rankings of cities that would be on his radar, why Cleveland? Economically struggling, a lot of, salt of the earth type people. Why wouldn't you be more focused on certain, like, hyper-violent areas of the Middle East to be on your radar than Cleveland? Maybe get over that, God.
Wow, taking shots at the Middle
East. Not taking a shot at God necessarily either, but just maybe asking him to rethink this. That's what's happening here.
Bunsen burner blowtorch to God. Wow.
Let's get our priorities straight,
please. And from Mark, too. That's a surprise.
To our listeners from the Middle East, that is Mark Sessler.
All right.
He lives in West L.A.
I know they're hurting right now, but they have had three straight NBA Finals appearances. Things haven't gone too poorly.
Well, and they came within one inning of winning the World Series last year too. So,
well, by the way, that's not what I would call. That's painful. Exactly. That's not joy.
I'm saying
that's happened to them before.
The Indians are a great team now, and the Cavs obviously have LeBron. If the Browns could just get over the hump,
right?
We don't need any more documentaries from ESPN.
I would be fine for there to be no more documentaries, including if that means Cleveland actually does something more than win two games in a season.
It is airing again this weekend.
Speaking of ESPN documentaries,
we get the narrative. It's been out there for a while.
Horrible NBA playoffs. I'm very disappointed how it all turned out. But I just want to say the one thing I was looking forward to, and I saw hundreds of commercials leading up to it, was the Celtics-Lakers 30 for 30. I think it was Best of Enemies is the name of it. And, I sit down in front of my television. I put the young boy to bed. And my other boy hasn't come home yet. And I'm like, oh, I'm going to dig in on this because I love that Magic Bird.
He's out partying?
History. Yeah, he's getting bombed. I've lost control of Jack Reddy's 2.5. And the first voice I hear basically is Donnie Wahlberg. I grew up on the south side of Boston where Larry Bird was king, and I love Boston. And then it's like, ooh, dueling narrator. Here comes Ice Cube. Oh, the Lakers were – everything was all about the Lakers, and Larry Bird's terrible. It's like, do not hit me with the dueling narrators with Donnie Wahlberg of all people, not even Mark, and then Ice Cube again? I mean, how many more documentaries does Ice Cube have to be involved with narrating about the Los Angeles sports scene? We did it. What are we going to just keep on doing this? Come back to us, 30 for 30.
I very much like this rant.
Bro, you're trash.
I mean, clever move by you to pivot to Cube to distract attention away from your Donnie Wahlberg Boston impression.
That was solid.
I don't know what that was.
No,
it was had some Gary Bartage going
on. It was weird. Let me try it again. I grew up in Southie, where Larry Bird was king.
Wait a minute. No.
You lived in Boston. I can't do it either.
The word Larry did not come out correctly there.
I lived on a college dorm campus. It was I wasn't exactly, you know, out where like the Goodwill Hunting guys were.
Sure.
Anyway, I just you know the Ice Cube thing. They just did that with the Raiders thing with. Wasn't there a Raiders documentary?
Yeah,
Ice Cube narrated, and it was good. And it was fine. It was nice that Cube was involved with that one. But now you're running him back for this, and it's Donnie against Ice Cube. How can you?
Well, Donnie is a little low wattage. That's a concerning choice by ESPN.
I will say one thing about the Raiders, though. I mean,
does it have to be? Does it have to be a Wahlberg
organization?
Too?
There's an organization worthy of some documentaries. A lot of good things have happened.
Well, that's certainly true.
Did we ever even get to the Browns news?
Yeah, Myles Garrett had a foot injury.
Oh, I mean, I don't even recall talking
about that. Yeah, we did. It's not that serious, they hope, and we hope it's not. And if it is serious, remember that's how we got to it, then God hates the Browns.
Then I am going to leave the company.
Yeah. Finally.
Because enough is enough.
Oh, I totally get that. And finally, Greg, they put him on the road this week. Greg Rosenthal went to Rams camp on Tuesday. So you might remember last year it was Greggy Does Dallas. And now this year, let's call it Greggy Pokes Thousand Oaks.
Ooh, I like that. It's also kind of gross.
That's what we're going for.
I will. I mean, Thousand Oaks is a beautiful town. So I guess if I was gonna poke a town, I had never
might as well be a hot town.
I had never been there before, but they are at Cal Lutheran, a university I wasn't familiar with, but a beautiful setting. Some mountains in the back. Perfect weather. And it's very quiet. One thing that struck me being up there, it's almost like the Rams are like a small market team in terms of their coverage still. I mean, they were in St. Louis, which is one of the smallest markets, but it was pretty quiet. It was great because, you know, I could talk to people, but, you know, five or six, you know, print reporters, you know, a couple local TV people. That's about it. You
I
know,
noticed that
NFL
last
team,
year, too.
It was quiet.
And there was an incredible access. Like, there'd be
a
scrum and there'd be – there's no you couldn't call it a scrum. Well, there were three reporters standing around.
When we did, I went to Oxnard last spring when they did the Hard Knocks press conference, and that was the Rams' first year back in L.A. You would think there would be a lot of L.A. reporters, and it was just like me and like three other guys there asking the questions on something that was live on NFL Network. And afterwards, there was just like anybody could have gone up to any of the front office officials. They had Todd Gurley and a couple other players available. And it was just – there was no swell at all.
Well, it makes sense. I guess it makes sense because you've got reporters going to the Angels and the Dodgers and, I don't know, other thing. I mean, they are having to win over
– the NFL, though.
I mean – they're going to have to win over this market in terms of interest, I guess. I mean, the institute, you know, in Cleveland, it's like people have been Browns fans for 50 years. So, you know, you got to build that back up.
Greg, so what were your takeaways from your visit, if you had any at all?
Well, Greg, one thing that stuck out was – I had a couple. Greg Robinson. You remember Greg Robinson, number two overall pick in the draft?
Yes.
Barely.
He was not even getting on the field with the first or the second team. So that made
– woof.
That made me think that they are going to move on from Greg Robinson, or they're really trying to send a message, but he's due $3.5 million, and that's a lot for a guy who's, I guess, right now fifth or sixth in their rotation at tackle, which is crazy.
Do you want to know the message that they were sending?
What?
Hey, Greg Robinson, you suck.
Stop. That's terrible.
That is, you know, they're not letting him play. That's all. Yeah.
Sit down, be humble might be the second part of that message.
Sit down! Be humble. Todd Gurley.
Greg never likes when we're openly critical of players.
I was pointing out.
Oh, stop. Leave him alone. That's you always react the same way.
It's not true at all.
Well, he's building a relationship with the Rams. So, you know, he's going to have to be up there in beautiful Thousand Oaks maybe sooner or later.
You know what? So. He's like a guy, Greg's in AA, NFL.com, and he wants to get the tap. He wants to come up to the majors, NFL Network, and that's how you stay there. You got to have access. You need to treat the players as higher entities than yourself. And I see it now. It makes sense.
Well, with that in mind, I'll point out it did look like if you're a Todd Gurley fantasy owner that hated life last year because they would never get him the ball in the passing game. I hesitate to take too much away from watching these practices in shorts, but you couldn't help but notice that he's lining up out wide, you know, outside of two wide receivers a couple times. Then he's motioning in, running the other way, and they're throwing it to him. I mean, he seemed to be getting a lot of targets in the passing game, and I would find that exciting. Tyler Higbee was the other guy who had a great day. I mean, I don't know if he's had a great couple of weeks, but he was a beast in the end zone.
One question, because, yeah, it's what can you take away in terms of what you're seeing play to play, but is there any – do you see any shared DNA between the Redskins on tape and the Rams offense, or is it just too hard to put that together at this point?
I think just the way that McVay talks in terms of the – he's trying to create matchups. You know, that's what he answered when talking about Gurley. And Gurley was really trying to – it's almost like the reporters are trying to make him own that he struggled last year, and he almost refuses to say that, that it's all a team thing. He said he doesn't care about what he does individually. He only cares about the team. But I think there's just a confidence from all the players on both sides of the ball, but especially offense. It's like, hey, we have some people that know what they're doing. I mean, a lot of Gurley was talking about, you know, just crediting the coaches. They weren't disparaging last year's coaches, but Jared Goff and Gurley and really the offensive guys were just so effusive in how good these offensive coaches were. You can't help but compare them to the Jeff Fisher staff.
Was everyone nice to you, Greg?
Yeah.
They were nice to Greggy. They were took care of him.
I mean, everyone was.
Were you treated as
great
with respect
up there?
Did you do any hits?
No right. Hits. I was kind of collecting stuff for a Wade Phillips.
You should be doing hits. Why aren't they giving you hits?
Feature. I did let them know, but you know they have other people elsewhere that they decided to use.
That's terrible. Any other takeaways, Greg? Before we move on.
No, that's about it.
Did you have a fun time?
Connor Barwin was a fantastic interview, and it was very nice to really make extra time, like after their meetings
cool.
was there, and that'll be in the Wade Phillips.
Did you expense a meal or drinks after? Were you able to eat up there before you came home to your family responsibility?
I was worried. Yeah, so I stopped at Trader Joe's right near their facility and got a couple grab and go things. It was about $8.
Oh, I would milk that expense account for more than I think you have roughly $35.
Oh, yeah.
I could have gotten dinner on the way back. I should have done that, but I didn't.
Yeah, next time I would say maximize that. Use that money where you can.
Well, they pay you for gas, too, and they pay way too much for some reason. I don't know why. Like, the gas rate's very high.
Yeah, don't. Yeah, let's not let them know that.
Yeah.
Well, no one's listening.
They seem fair to me.
And when you were driving up to the facility, did you roll down the windows and crank your tunage up and say, hey, I'm getting out of the office. This is why I'd work for the NFL. Anything like that?
I was listening to some, you know, podcasts. I think some tennis podcasts.
Oh, boy. Is not cranking
some
tunage.
Some WTF with Marc Maron. Listened to a little bit of that.
Okay.
Like that.
I did feel like leaving there, though. There is something to, all right, I put in an honest day's work. Also, I filed before I left. So
that's key.
Sometimes I'm writing, you know, at night at home. That tends to be my thing lately. And it's like, I filed, you know, you get in the car, it's sunny, you got a little tan, you're like, I'm an honest man, making an honest living.
That's what's funny. It is, it's funny too, because in the rare occasions, every once in a while, when I've been in New York working for this job, and maybe let's say, for instance, because I'm aware of who all the Jets beat writers are, if I go to cover like a Rex press conference or something like that, I always feel like they're all looking at me like, who's this asshole? Like, we are the beat guys. Who is this loser showing up?
Oh, I think they are.
Yeah. I'm saying that. But in L.A., you know, it's a different vibe. I don't think you were being judged at all.
All the beat guys were extremely nice and gracious. And their ESPN reporter, Alden Gonzalez, says he listens to the podcast.
Oh.
So shout out to Alden.
Yeah, Alden Gonzalez.
Hey, G.
So that was Greggy Polk's Thousand Oaks. Let's move on. Checking on the end around. Over on the old end around, Jeremy Maclin. As we know, are we doing it again? Holy
every show now.
We're back.
This team.
In the Ravens' nest again.
Mark's least favorite team in the NFL.
We might have to stop talking about the Ravens for the rest of the summer after this run. Anyway, Jeremy Maclin, you know that what happens when a prominent – a little interesting that Jeremy Maclin made the cut here. Whenever a prominent free agent is – doing visits and a local restaurant will send a tweet, you know, and insert popular product here for life.
That'll be fine with the bird sound. Thank
I know.
You.
Let's kill the crows.
In the service of, you know, publicity and some goodwill for the fans. Anyway, so there's a restaurant called Jimmy's Seafood in Baltimore that offered Macklin. First, they said free crab cakes for the length of his contract. And then when Macklin didn't respond, they just upped the ante and doubled down and made a lifetime offer.
Wow.
And what they didn't know is that Macklin was tracking it the whole time. He had it in his back pocket. So after he signed that deal with the Ravens, he came back at Jimmy's Seafood and tweeted, "I'd read what y'all said. I love crab cakes, LOL." And then Jimmy Seafood responded, Mark, this is, I want to get your take on this. Jimmy Seafood responded, "We are crabs of our word." And to me, the language of the tweet clearly seems to indicate that the crabs themselves are running Jimmy Seafood. And that's, you know, fascinating and impressive, quite frankly. Then you take a step back and go, wait a second. If the crabs are running the restaurant and they're serving crabs, it just took a dark, dark turn.
A Solient Green type turn almost. And on top of it, they're literate and have a grasp of social media, which is also, you know, news.
Right. You can't. It can't be easy to type with those crab claws.
But let's not bury the lead here. They are sacrificing
their own.
To people like Jeremy Macklin and the thousands and thousands of crab-obsessed Marylandites.
But in theory...
Self-hating crabs.
Right. Like, the best-looking crabs are the one that you would put on a plate, maybe not for crab cakes.
Ooh, it's true.
But it's like, how do the crabs decide who gets offed here? Why would it be the higher-level crabs?
Not just self-hating crabs, Greg Rosenthal. Genocidal crabs. And finally in the news, Ben McAdoo. So that was troubling. Like, that took a sharp left turn onto troubling Boulevard.
Right. It's like that skiing movie where they end up eating the dead.
I will say one thing. I've never eaten crab cakes in my entire life.
Not a surprise.
No, all right. But then the only time...
You're a fooditarian.
I don't eat crabs, but the one time I came close to trying it, I had a girlfriend... and her family lived, very nice family, lived in the Baltimore area. But our relationship was on very rocky soil, to say the least. And we went out in the Baltimore area to have crab cakes, at least they were, and I was going to maybe try one.
Sure.
And we had quite a few beers in us. We were young, early 20s. And she kept referring to me, twice mistakenly referred to me by the name of her ex-boyfriend in front of her family.
Woof.
And so, which was...
Wow,
that was
twice!
Sort of,
that's terrible.
That was a... Well, it was... Things,
the first time
it was a microcosm of everything else that was happening, I think. But on top of it, I was like, I don't like crab cakes. I don't like Baltimore. I'm getting out of this situation, so let's get out of this nest.
I had a somewhat similar situation with a name faux pas. This was shortly after getting out of my college relationship, which carried into post-college, and I was going on a Valentine's Day date with a young woman in the city of Hoboken, home of Mike Garofalo, and I accidentally called this date my ex-girlfriend's name as we were leaving the restaurant.
Mm.
And
date
the guy is drunk!
I was a little drunk. I think that's accurate. Finally,
you're missing out on crab cakes, by the way. Give me a break. It's delicious.
And by the way, Mark, you missed the show Monday. You said
or just steam crab, whatever.
You had a stomach bug, Mark.
Right.
And I just want to ask. Just be honest. Did it have anything to do with your Tom Brady diet?
No, had not had it. I'm just examining. I'm just doing those once in a while. Had not had one of those in 72
hours.
Don't
trust that book.
I will dig in more on this topic later, but I think it's getting too much press for being ultra weird when it's really just essentially not as weird as I thought it would be.
Hmm. And finally...
But no, don't try to link it to that.
Yeah, well, the jury's out.
The jury is not out. There's no jury up, you know, attending to this case. I had not eaten that. I had probably 9 meals after having a Tom Brady meal.
That was like...
They've been very good.
That was like the equivalent of Bill Cosby's defense team. It was like, we're going to call one witness and we will settle our defense in 14 minutes.
Why on earth are you drawing a parallel to that of all things?
Hey, when I could draw a parallel directly from Tom Brady to Bill Cosby, I'm going to do it. Finally, in the end around, whoa, Ben McAdoo got a haircut. Whoa, did anybody see this Ben McAdoo haircut?
Yeah, I saw it.
Whoa. Ben went. He had a very strange haircut last year with the Giants. Let's just put it that way. It was kind of like there was no way to really make sense of it. It was like too short and too long, and it looked faked, but then obviously real. It looked like it was combed, but then it looked kind of messy. It was a strange do. So what did he do? He pulled in the sides a little bit. He got tight on the sides. Threw it to the back, grew it out a little bit, and combed it to the back, and all the grease you can handle. And now he's got like a Pat Riley look. Thoughts?
Well, hold on.
What?
Greg, have you seen the photo?
Yeah.
I mean, Pat Riley owned that look.
He looks as good because Pat Riley pulled it off.
Handsome guy, too.
Well, Pat Riley didn't shave the sides, though. It's still kind of weird to me.
It's very weird. It's just weird. I'm sorry.
He was asked about it at the press. It got a surprising amount of buzz. Or maybe not surprising, considering the market. He was asked if he had been getting any, slack from the team.
It's striking.
Yeah, they've been pushing me, so got to keep it fresh, right?
I just think it was the right move, though. He's not there yet. He had to move away from that prior cut. I think the next thing is the goatee.
Yeah, but this one is also. Among NFL head coach haircuts, I would say it's still the weirdest.
It is strange. It is just strange.
Maybe it would look good on like a 19-year-old, but for some reason on McAdoo, who is about the most serious, like him and his old boss, Mike McCarthy, are probably the two most humorless guys in front of a podium. They're just so serious. Like, they're serious about their job. They're serious about everything. And then he steps up with that haircut, which is just not serious.
And you're operating with a mustache at the same time, and you have
it's
to.
A goatee.
It is a goatee, but he's taken some off the chin.
This is what I would
I'm looking at a photo here. It's, yeah.
I have to say, I can't get a feel on Ben McAdoo, like, who he is as a person, what's going on, like, what makes him a head coach. He is one of the most confounding head coaches, not in a good or bad way, I can remember in a long, long time.
Well, he's coming off an 11-5 season and a playoff.
Talented coach.
I would grow out the sides a little bit. I agree that's a little off-putting. And then I would either lose the goatee or grow in a full beard. And I'm telling you, it'll do a lot.
I would go full beard because he's, you know, and these coaches, he's not exactly like a Bill Cowher, like, chin he's operating with either. So I'd grow a big beard. And may take a little density off the top of
wow,
the hair.
Wow, butted burner blowtorch.
No, I think he's
tower.
You absolutely have you have something to work with here, but I think the beard is a good idea.
That's what's happening in the news. Elevate your underwear game to the next level with MeUndies. What is MeUndies? Just seriously soft, feel good undies delivered right to your door. MeUndies are MeUndies are designed in LA and made from sustainably sourced Micro Mazal, a fabric 3 times softer than cotton, which is, you know, I never really thought about that as I read it. That's considerably softer.
That's pretty soft.
It's almost, dare I say, too soft? I mean, how soft do you want to get?
It's a fair question.
MeUndies softer than soft. Well, they're even admitting it. They're basically saying, I can't even explain how soft.
There's no word choice here for this.
Lugs undies come in an ever-changing selection of classic colors, bold shades, and adventurous patterns. So you can tailor your undies to your own personal style. And guess what?
What?
You can save time and money each month. See, that's extra words. You could save time and money with a monthly subscription. And if you're not ready for a subscription, that's okay. You can still save. That's because MeUndies is offering you 20% off your first pair. Just use our emphasis there, our special URL, MeUndies.com/AroundTheNFL, and get 20% off your first pair. So go ahead, revamp your underwear drawer because you know what? You deserve it. MeUndies.com/AroundTheNFL. All right, Greg, we got to hit it. This broke right before you went away, and it's kind of a touchy situation, let's face it, because
not too touchy. It's old news. 2 weeks ago.
Well, that's why we showed respect. We waited for you to get back because I thought it was important for you to be in the room for this discussion, which is Miko Grimes came after you real hard. I mean, we're talking Bunsen burner blowtorch to the maximum. All about a column that Greg wrote And I'll start here. And I know, Greg, you expressed to me privately that you don't really want to dwell on this, but I think let's at least touch on what this is, because Greg wrote in a column a couple weeks ago, and I'll read it verbatim here. In the Grimes Media Power Rankings, Miko topped Brent last season for headlines, despite Brent turning in one of the most randomly dominant seasons ever for an aging quarterback. Expecting Grimes to back that up at 34 years old is unfair, and the Bucs are very thin after their starters at the position. This team will be targeted in a pass-happy division. Now, Mark, that's fair criticism, isn't it?
I don't even think it's criticism.
If anything, he's lifting up Brent Grimes, and Brent Grimes should be happy about what Greg wrote about Brent Grimes. Michael Grimes, not so sure where she comes down here.
All right, I will even say, I will even take this, and again, Greg, not totally comfortable talking about this.
Well, but I don't want you guys to talk for me for it either.
But I will. My point is, in Greg's defense,
why don't you and I break down the whole thing back and forth?
Greg, you just watch. In my thoughts on this, Greg's little quip that got him on her radar, that Miko topped Brent in the 2015 season for headlines, or 2016 season, that was not even a cheap shot, because Brent Grimes had a quietly very
strong season. To point out he had a great season, of course, and
under the radar.
And she was in the headlines a lot. I mean, the last couple weeks, I mean, we don't need to go through it all, but she, you know, we've heard of Miko Grimes. She's been in the headlines. I got this information literally when they called my boarding group to get on my plane, and I had one, you know, toddler in one hand and the other in the other hand, and Jeff Darlington, our old colleague, texted me this, and I actually thought, well, this is the timing could not be more perfect, because I'm going to be disconnected and off Twitter, and I don't want to be. If I was here, I would have been sitting there reading my mentions and all of this stuff all day. But I am someone, I have a really strong feeling of nothing bothers me more than when you see like a media figure going back and forth with another media figure on Twitter. To me, it is the most obnoxious thing in the world. So that's why I don't want to talk, because I have no need to be part. No one gains from that. No one gains from going back and forth.
Now,
I kind of thought, you know, I'm a fan. I kind of think, you know, Miko Grimes is funny. If there was one line where she said something about, you know,
I'll read that for you.
My two G's in my name. I mean, it kind of just cracked me up. On some level, I was just delighted and then just wanted to move on.
Actually, the tweet is not on this page. What was it? It was...
By the way, I will say this. If you do a search for Miss Grimes on Google, the first entry is Miko Grimes Wiki. The second is Grimes Greg Rosenthal. It's obviously...
It's recent, yes.
Well, it's impactful.
It's also...
I do remember it roughly. It was something to do with the bull two G double G's in his name. He's a not a G. which was funny. And if I didn't work for the Shield, I would have immediately changed my Twitter profile to... You know, quote, he's a not a G.
That
made me laugh.
There was the one that got on Wes's radar last week about how she pointed out the number of followers and she called you a...
Oh, well, I appreciated that. Yeah. She was pointing out like how many followers I had, almost like, hey, this guy...
Why are you all following this blank dork, she said.
You can't appreciate that. Come on. I mean, I feel like you're going too easy on her, and I don't know if it's because you don't want the war to continue. But I was so excited about this. I was disappointed that Greg didn't want to launch a counteroffensive. We had Lil Debbie on retainer ready to let out a diss track.
Get your act together, bro. You're trash.
We were ready to drop a major diss track on Miko Grimes, who, according to one of her tweets, listens to the show. Sure, honey. There's no way she listens to the show. But because we were respecting Greg's wishes, because he was the one directly involved with this beef, this big side of beef, this filet mignon beef that a podcast host dreams about, one of the people on the show being involved with, I got to defer to Greg, and we can't
take
it. Well,
yeah, I did see that. Well, it didn't stop you from including it in some show the greatest NFL feuds of all time. And I was like, what feud? Have I been involved? I've been involved,
wait,
actually.
What is this?
Well, that was your segment. Podcast what a, episode last
what a
week.
Great, was like, what a great related segment to what we discussed.
But how is it? I've actually been in some NFL media feuds in this building that will stay unnamed in my time here.
True.
This was not a feud. I have not been involved in this feud whatsoever.
I think you know why we did that? Well, we were fixing for a fight. Let's be honest. We were ready to go to war.
It would have been very different if I was here and we were doing the podcast that day. The whole thing would play out differently. But now,
you know, frankly, I don't – Mark.
Yes.
I don't think Greg has been gracious enough with how loyal we were to him and how we went to bat for him or ready to go to war with this mad woman.
Yeah,
and he's just acting like it's something that should have been assumed and it's
no,
something
I,
we should care
a,
about.
That's a fair point.
Did you listen to
that? I appreciate Wes was fired up, and I appreciate you guys all having my back.
Your boy Jeselnik tweeted, "Stand with Miko." Well, what is that about?
I mean, that's his thing.
He had a couple, and one of them was hashtag I stand with Miko.
I will say this, although I multiple times would respond to people and say, yes, I obviously with Greg, I did not go so far as to include Miko Grimes' Twitter handle. I didn't want to deal with her.
Miko Grimes,
whatever her name is. I did not want to deal with her on any level. So that's where my loyalty, hit a wall to some degree.
Never before have I wanted RJVP to come back as much as I do after this happened.
We could get you to listen to your first episode.
I might plug in.
If we come back for the Miko Grimes.
If you
do it, Shadowy League figures.
I would listen to like a 3-hour podcast. Whoa. Wait, so you go after them, but you won't go after the woman that called you a p*** with no G's or whatever.
I mean, it's all showbiz, you know?
Just one gigantic roaming bit.
All right, so I believe it to be a missed opportunity, but I respect Greg's.
I knew you would. I knew you would.
Because I thought it would have been not only would it have been a lot of fun.
But we're still talking about it here 5 minutes later.
No, but I really wanted that little Debbie diss track. That's what I really wanted.
Well, she'll be disappointed, and I'm going to have to reach out to her people now, right? Yeah. Because I back and forth probably 14 to 15 texts arranging, changing schedules. She was very excited to appear on behalf of this effort. So, we've disappointed little Debbie. That's where my concern, I'm starting to be. That's a problem.
That's another example of how we had mobilized on Greg's behalf.
I appreciate it, but
and
we're
then,
different.
And then he said, stand down.
But we're different humans. You would react.
Oh,
to
yes,
this.
We are.
You tell me this often. You say I'm somehow not human, which is ridiculous.
I didn't say you're not human.
But I react to things differently. Maybe this is one of them.
That's why we're respecting it.
Right? And I like speaking for and handling myself too. I love that you guys stuck up for me, but I'm gonna say handle it how I want to handle it.
And now here's the world premiere of Lil Debbie's diss track.
Here we go.
Just kidding. All right, let's move on. How about this? If she comes after you, actually, she kept coming after Greg days and days after this. But if something else happens,
well, that's the thing.
Can we reconsider this?
There is something, I don't know. There is something I like in these situations when people just don't respond.
Hey, you were the bigger man, Greg. You've proven
it. She's not technically a man, so he is.
You were the bigger human. You're a human. You showed it with this. All right, let's move on. What a missed opportunity. It's okay, though. Little Debbie's going to be crushed.
I'm going to have to deal with that after work. I mean, I'm getting out of here as soon as the show ends, and I'm going right into a bee's nest.
Bad news. The show is never going to end.
one thing I've learned is, my friendship with Dan, matters, and it's nice, but it's not as important to him as the show.
I resent that. That is a theme that is thrown around here.
It's a joke.
Of course it's important to me, but I guess we are different in the sense that a complete evisceration of this Miko Grimes persona from a very popular NFL podcast going after her hard, that would have been, to me, not only entertaining, but also a show of brotherhood. But that's where we're different. Buy, sell, hold on minicamp narratives. Yes, this is the final week of minicamps before the NFL's dark period. So we decided to check in on some of the storylines percolating across the league, and we will share a couple each, and you tell us, and we'll all jump in whether we buy, hold, or sell on these storylines. Mark, why don't you get us going, baby?
Well, I know that coaches never lie about their quarterback situations and their impending quarterback duels. We have one in Denver. We heard about Vance Joseph saying he's taken nothing away from May or June that will stick. But Denver Post columnist Mark Hisla, longtime writer for the Broncos, there's a little report out there. He called it, in quotes, obvious that Paxton Lynch is the clubhouse leader over Trevor Siemian, with, in quotes, hints everywhere. This guy talks to a lot of people. Kisla believes the only way Lynch doesn't start is if he messes it up, calling Siemian nothing more than the fail-safe device. I found that a little surprising after what we saw from Siemian last year. Are we buying this new leader in the clubhouse, according to the Denver Post?
I'm selling hard on this, Mark, because I believe that Siemian, although you guys were bigger fans than I was, I guess, on some level, but he certainly showed in year one that he was somebody that could potentially develop into a proficient starter. And Lynch barely played, and I get it. There's pressure involved that he's a first-round pick, but he was not close to ready, and I feel like it would be weird to go to him as option one. It would make more sense to me to go with the guy that showed promise that is in year two. And then you bring in Lynch if Siemian falters and see if you can get a spark. The other way around, I feel like it doesn't make as much sense. I'm selling on it.
I was really surprised to see this report as well, Mark, especially because, for what it's worth, at OTAs it sounded like Lynch wasn't playing great.
Right.
But I'm going to buy it anyways because I kind of trust his instincts as someone that's there every day and is talking to people. And it echoes something we did talk about, I think, at the beginning of this offseason, was the tie goes to Lynch. So I think in all things being equal, I do believe the front office and the coaching staff would like Lynch to win. And someone that's there every day watching and talking to people, maybe that is the truth that, look, if neither one of these guys is going to stand out, I don't support it. I really think Siemian deserves a chance. But if neither one stands way apart from the other, then Lynch is the favorite.
I'm also buying it because I trust the reporting. I mean, Kisla's been on target for years and years on this stuff. And you have a first-round investment on a quarterback. Siemian, I think, overachieved last year compared to the fact that no one knew who he was during that Super Bowl week a couple years ago. But my thing with Lynch, it's like, all you hear over and over that he's still been erratic. He's still been, you know, far from looking like a guarantee starting quarterback. So you have to see what happens. I think there's a lot of room for this to change. But I think you're right. If they're even, you obviously go with the higher pedigree. The plan was to play him in year two, not year three.
But isn't this the exact time of year where coaches are going to grasp onto anything positive with a young player like Paxton Lynch and say, oh yeah, he's looking great, and you know, and then they're feeding that to the media, even a guy that's plugged in like this gentleman. We'll see.
They're a really interesting team, I think, because of their championship pedigree, because they won 12 or 13 games a year for four straight years, because a lot of those players are still there, but yet they're in this really good division, and it could go either way. It could go south, or they could win the division. Nothing would surprise me.
All right, next up, bye, sell, or hold. It's time to start talking kickers.
Nick or Robbie? This ain't the Bachelorette, bitch.
Whose voice is that? Is that you?
That was Dan. That was good.
Great job, Sully. Roberto Aguayo and Nick Folk, of course. Of course, if you're following this, and how can you not be following this competition, this no-holds-barred competition? Nick Folk got out to a big early lead when he drilled all his kicks in that with the uprights being closer together, and then Robbie faltered. This is during OTAs. Well, guess what? Just when he counted out Robbie, he's back in the race. Midway through practice, this according to Jenna Lane of ESPN, midway through practice, both lined up for five attempts, increasing the distance with each kick. Folk went first and made his first four attempts, his fifth and final kick from 54 yards away, bounced off the right goalpost. Aguayo went next. One. Give me some dings, Sully. Two. Three. Four. And from 54 yards out, five. Five for five, baby. And then I want you to listen to this quote from Dirk Koetter, who, this is an interesting thing for someone to say about any competition in camp.
Roberto got the best of it today, looked good. I mean, Nick looked good. I think we worked back to 54 yards on that last one, and Nick's was a little bit short. Roberto hit five clean ones, so that's what competition is.
Oh, I'm buying, baby, that this competition is neck and neck.
I am buying it also.
Only missed one kick, right?
Yeah, but don't
you... Cotter's talking about it like okay, advantage. I love that this is a daily thing.
I am buying it 100% because they have waited so long to be able to go to the reporters and say something positive about this. It reminds me a lot of what we just talked about. This is a second-round draft pick who has been an absolute negative distraction. Not a distraction, but in terms of the situation, it's a distraction for the Bucks to have to deal with someone. It's a high-profile, large gaffe scenario where he keeps missing kicks in games. He's going to probably maybe not even make the team if he continues on that trajectory. So I am buying they want to see him succeed. And it's the other one, if it's a tie between Robbie and Nick, you go Robbie.
You know what could happen, by the way? I didn't think of this until right now. It'd be a little anticlimactic, what with Hard Knocks coming up. They could end up keeping both.
Keep.
Because they're paying Nick anyway a large chunk of money. And then you give Robbie the job and then maybe have Folk do kickoffs or something. And then if Robbie falters, you cut Robbie.
Or have Robbie do kickoffs.
Other way around, whatever.
Ooh, I could see that.
And then they get to kind of play it by ear. Because, you know, Nick Folk will probably get picked up, I would think, because he is an accurate veteran.
You definitely want to give your second year, second round kicker a nice red shirt year. That's the position that you need to wait till year four or five to get the real product.
All right, and that was the latest kicker update by the old Zeuser.
Aguayo. Folk. Second round picks don't always get second chances.
Greg?
I'm going to go with all of the OTA and mini camp buzz on Adrian Peterson being sky high. When you listen to Drew Brees or the Saints talking about Adrian Peterson, it has been gushing. It has been, we haven't seen a guy look this, you know, explosive. You know, players marveling over his burst and his stride length and Peterson himself just talking about that, you know, he would be lying if he didn't take it as motivation that people, you know, think he was kind of done, that no one wanted to sign him. And it's at the point now in New Orleans, I think that the OTA minicamp storylines has raised the excitement and the expectation level for Adrian Peterson this year.
I'm selling.
You buying?
I'm selling. And I'm not selling because I disrespect Adrian Peterson, and I don't want Wes to hit me over the head with a crowbar because I know he's very high on Peterson this year. But I just think that Adrian Peterson, one of the more famous NFL players in the last 20 years, or certainly one of the most celebrated, going to a new team and having this fresh start and still having something in the tank. I think he has something in the tank. Is going to lead to all these type of dispatches in June, which is this guy looks better than ever. This guy's amazing. This guy is this guy is that. And I think I still hold true to the point that he was beat up last year. He won the rushing title, but maybe didn't have the same burst in his younger years the year before. He's 32 years old. I think Peterson will be helpful for them, and I think he's going to potentially have another, like, 1,200-yard season. But do I think that he's going to be Adrian Peterson the way that people are talking about him right now? I'm selling on that.
Yeah, I'm selling, too, because I think there's a way to sell on this without dismissing Adrian Peterson's
That's important.
Upcoming regular season, which I am also thinking he can be Adrian Peterson of that we've seen of late. But the idea that everyone is seeing this vastly different player now in these practices, that's what I'm selling on.
Well, I'm not buying that they're talking a lot about that they're going to throw him the ball, and we'll see
that. That was one of my potential ones. I don't buy that because you already have players in place to do
that. Yeah, we'll see about that, but I am buying it. I just think this guy's one of the greatest players we've ever seen, and he's playing on the Saints is the main thing.
But you're buying that he looks tangibly different than what the Vikings saw in previous Mays.
That just he looks great. That he can be great, and it'll end up looking even better than he is because he's on that team. That, you know, I'm getting a little excited about Adrian Peterson in New Orleans.
So it's going to be fun seeing him at the Superdome and having this chip on his shoulder. That's all going to be fun. Will he be the best running back in the league still, which is how he's being talked up, frankly? And I don't know. That seems to be asking.
Not going to get the ball enough for that.
Next up, are you buying, selling, or holding on Christian Hackenberg's public execution by the local media in New York?
Christian Hackenberg is real?
I cannot remember the last time a New York athlete has been treated this unfairly. And let me say something. I don't hold high hopes for Christian Hackenberg myself. I think that it was obviously a big
reach. How about Geno Smith?
Or Mark
Sanchez?
That
he was treated fairly?
Yes, he earned everything he got for the way he acted, including getting his jaw broken for being a jack in the locker room. But let's talk about Hackenberg right now. I know that the reports are bad, the anonymous reports about last season were bad, but this has been so unfair to this kid, what's happened this past week with all the reports from real journalists, real sports writers doing reports on these passes that he's thrown that have bounced and hit reporters, who, by the way, and I'm not saying that I'm the most mobile human being, but let's calm down. It hit a reporter. Maybe a reporter's not moving too fast either, a little slow, and isn't able to get out of the way. And this is a situation where he's throwing these passes, and the Jets have done bad by him because the Jets don't know what they're doing right now. And they've gotten rid of everyone, including Eric Decker. So he's throwing to a bunch of these kids that nobody knows who half these guys are, and a lot of them are running bad routes. And so it's hard to really discern whether it was a really bad throw or a really bad route. But everybody's going ahead because the Jets are back to laughingstock status, which is always – it seems to people kind of like that. It's a little more fun when the Jets are bad. I get that. I understand that. But dragging him and making him the face of the Jets being a laughingstock of the league again, it just feels unfair. And if – and I worry that it's going to lead to him. I don't know how mentally strong the kid is, but it's going to lead to him having no shot here because he won't be able to block out just how much people believe him to be a joke before he's ever thrown an NFL pass. I am holding on Christian Hackenberg having any chance in the NFL, although I'm doubting it. I'm going to hold there, but I'm selling on this idea that he is so terrible that there's no reason why people should even take him seriously as a human being.
I think it's a perfect place to use the hold because we've never seen this guy in a game. There are practice players and there are players that look totally crazy in practice. Then the games begin and you hear about those guys all the time. And often it applies, they say, to the quarterback position. I think there's really concerning reports because there's been a beeline. And last year, I don't think Hackenberg was being beaten up as the sort of the face of the Jets' troubles the way he has this spring, and that is unfair. I agree with you there. But there's never been, like, the month or two where it's like, you know what, Hackenberg, he showed some real good things today, and there actually does seem to see some progress, or he came back looking like a different player. It's been a beeline of terrifying reports about this quarterback. That said, until he's in a game, why judge him on what?
Right, you can judge him on his college tape where he's one of the most inaccurate quarterbacks to ever be drafted in the first three rounds of the by an NFL
but that
team,
was that where was he could college. Not where
but that's it's just such a it's such a basic function of playing the position, just accuracy, and these are practices where you can't really take much away from them because it's supposed to be easy. And it's all scripted. You can't even do one-on-ones. I mean, there's so many restrictions. You can't. It's really not football, but it's built for the offense on a lot of these plays to run fairly smoothly. And I think the problem, he gets picked on because there's blood in the water and they just want to be vicious. And there's 40 reporters there, so people have to say some things to get noticed. But it's also because there's no defenders there, and he just misses a lot of throws, which I don't think you're normally used to seeing.
Well, a year ago, it was RG3 that was throwing the football houses and stuff. And so maybe and it went on to be that RG3 was an absolute
That was RG3 in steep decline for a period of 3 years.
Right.
So everyone kind of knew he was done, and then people were piling on this kid has never even
Hackenberg
played in the NFL.
Hackenberg may have no ascension. That's issue.
We'll
see.
It's unfair, but it's not surprising. I'm not sure what buying or selling in this one even means.
Yeah, I just wanted
to talk about this.
Well, you're a monster. Stand with Miko. We'll see what happens with young Christian Hackenberg. That's my point. Once you're a professional and you're in games and you stink, part of the gig is if you can get buried, and that's part of the job. But before you've done it, that's what I'm saying.
An unbelievably unfair, tough situation to think about the fact that these OTAs, which normally like reporters wouldn't have cared about, and people are doing grades. Come back to us, people that have done grades on the OTAs.
Give me a break worthy, but I'm sure for them it's like you've got to pump out 3-4 stories, and this is what they all do. That job is a little different than what we're able to do with our role.
Wrap it up, Greg.
The good one, there's plenty of good ones that don't go crazy on that stuff. All right.
I will not do a second.
Wait, I have a couple ones.
Yeah.
Oh, you didn't do a second one?
No, but I'm enjoying the second
one. Was one of your second ones Deshaun Kizer?
No. Why don't you take us down that road? Then I'll take us somewhere else.
We got a couple. Yeah. All right.
We really got to – yeah. We're getting up there.
Let's do a speed round.
That's good.
All right, go ahead.
Deshaun Kizer getting more buzz as a potential starter, and I will just say I am buying it. I like what I hear listening to the kid. And I don't know if it's really based – it's not based on how he's looked. I haven't seen that. It's just based on I think the Browns are giving him a real chance. I think they want him to have a real chance to win this job, and so I'm buying.
I'm buying, too, because the Browns, like the Jets and all other teams that are looking ahead to that loaded quarterback class, they need to find out what they have in Deshaun Kizer before they decide whether they want to draft another quarterback early in the first round. So they got to find out.
I know Sessler's buying.
Yeah, tweeted this morning. I think he'll be the week one starter, and it's not. I'm not at their practice, but it just seems like this is sort of trending that way if he is competent, and so totally buying it.
Mark.
All right. A lot of people think the Niners are going to be a big trash heap next year, or maybe just a little bit better, but there is a part of their defense. I think that defensive line is interesting. DeForest Buckner said that our front seven can be dominant this year. If you look at the pieces in place, there is potential buying, selling, or holding. Why would you hold here?
I'm going to hold. Because
all right, then you do it.
I'm going to hold because I do think if you look at all the pieces there, they got a lot of players. Like, they're going to cut some pretty good players there.
Yeah.
So I think they could be dominant, but it's a first-time coordinator, Robert Saleh. It's a lot of moving parts and different spots than they were really drafted for, so I'm not sure. But I think there's a potential. I guess that means I'm buying it.
I'm selling the 49ers in 2017. Might be better, but they won't be dominant at anything.
Just the front seven.
I said at anything,
Buckner,
they will not be dominant.
Eric Armstead, Solomon. A lot of people think Solomon Thomas would come out as the best
Bowman.
First
you said
rounder.
Dominant. You said dominant. I'll be fine.
Buckner, Thomas, Armstead, Navarro Bowman, Reuben Foster.
That's fine. They'll be fine.
Sexy.
Could be dominant.
Well, you're buying, so.
I guess. Yeah.
All right. That's it. By the way, Mark.
Yeah.
Before we go, I want to make sure we give you the stage for a second here because you wanted to get something out there. It is something you wanted to get off your chest.
Nor is it critical, or is it news, but I will.
I think everyone wants to hear what you want to talk about.
I was wandering around the building today, and I don't know who this person was because they work on a different floor. Seemed like a nice person in general, but it was a late 30, early 40s something male who used in conversation the term awesome sauce. And it kind of is another one of these phrases that if you're that person, you shouldn't ever be using that phrase at all.
No, sit down.
Exactly.
Be humble.
Find a new way to say what you're about to say.
It's like, grow up, Peter Pan.
Exactly. You're so far out of where you need to be by using that. But there's a couple other phrases that came to mind that as we get into the summer, and this is when this jargon starts to light up sometimes. It's time to put some of this to bed.
Is this on your sonar?
This is a language update. And people don't have to agree with me, but I'm not going to be using these phrases. Yes, queen, that is old now. Enough. We get it. Okay, this was nice a few months ago. Yas Queen, no longer.
Years ago.
Burying it. Whatever. Months, years. I don't want to hear about it again.
So you're out on Yas Queen.
That is gone.
Okay.
How about this? How about this? Totes. As in, it, you know, doesn't that math teacher
totes
suck, Gemma? Yeah, totes. Well, no, no. No more totes.
I feel like that's a big sully. I feel like a lot of these terms are going to be sully terms.
Well, no. Don't throw me under the bus
you
like
can
that.
Weigh
I haven't
in,
used any of those.
You can weigh
totes?
In.
Ever.
You can weigh in after I'm finished. How about that? Totes is out. Anyone, all right, anyone, and this, most people are aware that they're not doing it. Coolio, it's, there are still, I still hear this sometimes. I still hear it once in a while, and it's typically from white males. And it's unironically used, and it needs to stop right now.
Coolio's like, no one's talked about me since the Higher Learning soundtrack.
Agree
back off.
I think that 99% of the population understands this rule, but I have heard it in the streets of L.A., and it bothers me.
It was the Dangerous Minds.
Okay. Am I right when it's spelled as one word? Enough with that.
Am I right?
Yeah. Wasn't funny then, not funny now. All it's right. Not even helping. It's not even that much shorter when you're typing. Bay. Okay, saying things like Greg is bae. That was stupid to begin with, and I'm not into that, and I don't
Greg
want
Greg is bae? Are you sure that's how it's used?
I don't
used?
Think that's correct.
It's used in many different ways. You can
the
absolutely.
Usage is off there. I think it's like
you can find that. That you can no, find
like
it
salt bae.
That usage is right.
It is correct.
Yes, yeah. Thank you. Because when I read this
are
is,
you okay, now you're no, okay with Sully talking?
Absolutely. Thank you. That's why this is how I read this stuff sometimes, and it's like enough already.
Okay.
Greg is a good guy. Greg is not bae. I mean, all right. Anyone still calling things lit? That died a hard death in 2016, and it is lingering on, again, typically amongst clunky white males. And finally, AF, as in this party is lit as f***. Like, I'm done with that terminology in writing, too.
Okay. That seems like a millennial shot a little bit.
I think
although it is dead, though, because I just saw that on like a billboard for like an advertisement or maybe a movie using AF and I thought seeing that I was like, oh, that's done.
That's what I'm saying. Millennials, I'm not killing them at all. It's the reverse. They've moved beyond a lot of this crap. It filters up to the older clunky people still using this phraseology.
I don't even know I'll add one more if you don't mind.
Please do.
Mark, I like your list a lot and I didn't even know this was a thing, but on Friday in my neighborhood, you know, you put out the garbage cans on Thursday night, and then the trash guy comes on Friday, and there's three different pickups. You got the trash can, Jack knows it as that's where the stinky diapers go, and then you get the blue bin, which is for recyclables, and the green bin for, you know, tree clippings and things of that nature. And for the first time ever, the guy didn't come to pick up the black bin, which is the most important bin
Please.
Of the three. It's number one. You got to take away the black bin with the stinky diapers. So I called the sanitation department of Los Angeles.
Wow.
And I said, hey, bruh, I'm angry AF. come get my garbage can. And they were cool about it. And they came by. They said, oh, we'll be there on Tuesday. So I saw the other black can of my neighbor sit next door still out there. Said, oh, you know, shoot this guy. A little heads up, say, hey, don't bring your can in. They're going to come on Tuesday. And he came out. He's like, oh, thanks, bro. Thanks a lot. Thanks for the knowledge.
Oh, no.
maybe he's just really dumb. Maybe that's
no,
not a
he's
thing.
Not dumb.
Maybe that's not a thing, and he's just a little, you know.
What, he doesn't know how to pronounce knowledge?
Right, yeah.
How old is this guy?
He just never knew that the K was silent.
It's around our age.
Again, it's around our age.
Nice guy.
No, okay, I'm sure he's not listening to the show, hopefully, too. But, yeah, that's a troubling one.
Knowledge. It's like something Andy Bernard would say on The Office. So if that's a thing that other people are doing, probably, you know.
Cease.
Don't lean into that one anymore. Okay. Jesus, this is a long podcast. All right. We'll be back on Friday. It will be our last show of the week, obviously, but also the last time we'll do three shows until minicamp, so we'll have some fun. What's so funny? Oh, is there? It's on Urban Dictionary.
I looked it up on Urban Dictionary, and I do have to use the example that they wrote for it. Did you know that Shauna slept with Haven and got herpes? Thanks for the knowledge. I almost did her.
That all checks out.
I guess I'll give him a little credit that it's showing up on Urban Dictionary.
Oh, there's a lot on Urban
from
Dictionary.
From 2009.
That's a thing.
See, that's a perfect time for that to be a popular
right.
word. All right. We will be back on Friday, as I said. Make sure, give me 1 second here, Sully. Make sure you continue to leave comments and star ratings for the podcast. That means a lot to keep us moving up the old charts over on iTunes. They have a very strange system, but that means a lot. So thank you. And those of us, those of you that have reached out to me, say, what happened to the 5,000th listener celebration or 5,000th Redditor celebration? We'll get to that. Once we get to the dark period, we will, you know, finish off that contest. We'll find out some type of prize. So don't worry. It has not slipped through the cracks.
Right around the time that we filed donations for the forked teams that we were incorrect about.
Exactly. Well, yeah, we'll get to that too. So there you go. All right, Sully. Sully's like, get us out of here. I'm happy Sully came back. Okay. Stan Hans is signing off for the Sizzler. The old boss and Shawnee Sullivan, invincible behind the glass. Till Friday.